Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the program. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the On Second Thought Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. We are going to take President Obama's talk to the joint session of Congress and the Supreme Court. It has all the trappings of a State of the Union address, but it's not being called that. It's being called something else. So we're going to take it. As a matter of fact, can you bring up a little bit of the audio right now? Just keep it down. Yeah. Just so so we got it there in the background. We have an excerpt from Obama's address to Congress tonight that was released by the White House. He will say, quote, "But while our economy may be weakened and our confidence shaken, though we are living through difficult and uncertain times, tonight I want every American to know this. We will rebuild, we will recover, and the United States of America will emerge stronger than before." Which I think a lot of people need to hear. I don't hesitate for a moment to say that I need to hear that too. Things have been a little bit shaky lately. Woo! And I'm not talking about my own little corner of the known universe. I'm talking about the larger picture of not just the economy, but all the garbage and filth and trash that the Bush crime family left behind. You know, I was a Boy Scout, and I was always taught, leave your campsite cleaner and neater than when you arrived. And I don't know, Bush, when I think of a picture, a mental picture of how Bush left the presidency, I see I see crack pipes off in the corner and empty beer bottles and crushed beer cans and Cheney's electrodes and dirt and dust. And oh, my God, it's just horrible. But anyway, Obama needs to let us know. And there is something about hearing the leader of the country say, United States will recover. We're going to get through this. And it's good to hear that kind of confidence. What have we heard for the past 8 years? Fear, uncertainty, doubt, terror. When we heard anything, there has never been. If you think back over the last 9 years, eight years, you tell me when Bush or Cheney or any of these rat bastards ever said anything uplifting, or positive. It never happened. He is also, it's our understanding, going to say the weight of this crisis, referring to the economic crisis, will not determine the destiny of this nation. The answers to our problems don't lie beyond our reach. They exist in our laboratories and universities, in our fields and factories, in the imagination of our entrepreneurs, and the pride of the hardest working people on earth. Those qualities have made America the greatest force of progress and prosperity in human history, and we still possess them in ample measure. What is required now, he's going to say, is for this country to pull together, confront boldly the challenges we face, and take responsibility for our future once more. Now, in response, this freakish Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, is going to respond. And part of his response is going to be that Obama's plan is irresponsible. Once again, they're going to say that Obama is going to increase taxes. Jesus Christ, what do these people need? he's come out and said over and over and over again, he's going to cut taxes. But Jindal's going to say the way to lead is not to raise taxes and put more money and power in hands of Washington politicians. The plan will grow the government, increase our taxes, and saddle future generations with debt. It's irresponsible. What would you do, you little twit? Huh? What would you suggest? Oh, I know. Let's cut taxes on further. Let's make permanent the Bush crime family. Never mind. I get sick of these people. So I'm telling you this just so you know, we are not going to carry a single word of Bobby Jindal's response. Thanks to Ronald Reagan, there is no such thing as the fairness doctrine anymore. Screw them. This is the party of irrelevancy. It is the party of negativity. Bobby Jindal, for some reason, he thinks the white people in the Republican Party are going to allow him to get the Republican Party nomination for president 4 years or 8 years hence. And this is Bobby Jindal is a clown and not a very funny one. I've listened to his piss poor attempts at jokes and I, oh my God, sit down and shut up, okay? This guy, I'll tell you what, the dream ticket for me on the Republican side would be a Jindal-Palin ticket, or Palin-Jindal, with the promise that Rush Limbaugh would be Secretary of State. That would be, to me, the dream Republican ticket, because you know why? That would spell the end. That would be the murder that I've been talking about of the Republican Party. It would be the same as taking it out on a moonless night into a field and cutting its damn throat. So anybody out there in the Republican Party who's thinking Palin, Jindal, Limbaugh, keep thinking that. Please keep thinking that. So part of Obama's responsibility tonight is going to be a lot of form, if not a lot of substance, a lot of sizzle, if not a lot of steak. It is absolutely necessary. We need this. We desperately need this. After all this negativity from Republicans, all this crap from people like the CNBC guy the other day who started screaming into the camera, "You want to pay somebody else's house bill?" You know, enough already. Okay, enough already from these naysayers and doomsayers and the people whose only solution is to cut rich people's taxes yet again. Oh my God! All right. Now we're gonna have to cut away for commercial breaks. I'm sorry, but that's just the nature. Don't we, Kathy? We do. Yeah, that's the nature of this network. AB, it's required by our affiliates along the way. So while we probably could take it straight through, we do have obligation to our affiliates that we will be meeting tonight. So during the commercial breaks, if you want to, you have my permission to switch over to CNN or MSNBC. But if you go to Fox, I'll know about it, and I'll send some kind of a zapper over the wires here into your radio or your computer, and everything will just catch fire instantly. So you've got to go to CNN or MSNBC, all right? Let's, as a matter of fact, speaking of MSNBC, let's join their feed right now for a little bit until when do we have a break here? In about a minute and a half. So let's go ahead and join MSNBC, Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow and Chris Matthews and whoever else they were able to round up.
And it followed by with Congressman Clyburn behind it, but that embrace followed by about 30 seconds, a kiss from the Secretary of State. And wow. If we could have guessed who the Secretary of State would be, or that she would give this president a kiss a year ago today, you and I could have made all the money we could ever want in Vegas. Doing
what? They're talking about a kiss? Okay, you know, all right, sure. What the hell?
The president has made his way to the podium with great alacrity, given the number of hands to shake and embraces to give. And as he moves up there, the roar will continue. They will have to try to silence this joint session. They won't do it too quickly.
There are these moments when it turns into the British Parliament and they actually start hooting. It doesn't happen too often in Congress, but we actually have some hooting.
If you're watching on television, turn on television, watch there and turn the sound down and listen to us. But are the Republicans applauding? Oh, yeah, the Republicans are applauding. Bless their little pea-picking hearts. We'll see what happens as the speech progresses. We're just about coming up on a break. We'll get back here as quickly as we can. So do stick around, all right? This is the On Second Thought Radio Network.
With ourselves, we'll admit that for too long we have not always met these responsibilities as a government or as a people. I say this not to lay blame or to look backwards, but because it is only by understanding how we arrived at this moment that we'll be able to lift ourselves out of this predicament. The fact is, our economy did not fall into decline overnight. Nor did all of our problems begin when the housing market collapsed or the stock markets sank. We have known for decades that our survival depends on finding new sources of energy. Yet we import more oil today than ever before. The cost of health care eats up more and more of our savings each year. Yet we keep delaying reform. Our children will compete for jobs in a global economy that too many of our schools do not prepare them for. And though all of these challenges went unsolved, we still managed to spend more money and pile up more debt, both as individuals and through our government, than ever before. In other words, we have lived through an era where too often short-term gains were prized over long-term prosperity, where we failed to look beyond the next payment, the next quarter, or the next election. The surplus became an excuse to transfer wealth to the wealthy instead of an opportunity to invest in our future. Regulations were gutted for the sake of a quick profit at the expense of a healthy market. People bought homes they knew they couldn't afford from banks and lenders who pushed those bad loans anyway. And all the while, critical debates and difficult decisions were put off for some other time on some other day. Well, that day of reckoning has arrived, and the time to take charge of our future is here. Now is the time to act boldly and wisely, to not only revive this economy, but to build a new foundation for lasting prosperity. Now's the time to jumpstart job creation, restart lending, and invest in areas like energy, healthcare, and education that will grow our economy, even as we make hard choices to bring our deficit down. That is what my economic agenda is designed to do, and that is what I'd like to talk to you about tonight. It's an agenda that begins with jobs. As soon as I took office, I asked this Congress to send me a recovery plan by President's Day that would put people back to work and put money in their pockets. Not because I believe in bigger government. I don't. Not because I'm not mindful of the massive debt we've inherited. I am. I called for action because the failure to do so would have cost more jobs and caused more hardship. In fact, a failure to act would have worsened our long-term deficit by assuring weak economic growth for years. And that's why I pushed for quick action. And tonight I am grateful that this Congress delivered and pleased to say that the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act is now law. Over the next 2 years, this plan will save or create 3.5 million jobs. More than 90% of these jobs will be in the private sector. Jobs rebuilding our roads and bridges, constructing wind turbines and solar panels, laying broadband, and expanding mass transit. Because of this plan, there are teachers who can now keep their jobs and educate our kids. Healthcare professionals can continue caring for our sick. There are 57 police officers who are still on the streets of Minneapolis tonight because this plan prevented the layoffs their department was about to make. Because of this plan, 95% of working households in America will receive a tax cut. A tax cut that you will see in your paychecks beginning on April 1st. Because of this plan, families who are struggling to pay tuition costs will receive a $2,500 tax credit for all 4 years of college. And Americans who have lost their jobs in this recession will be able to receive extended unemployment benefits and continued health care coverage to help them weather this storm. Now, I know there are some in this chamber and watching at home who are skeptical of whether this plan will work. And I understand that skepticism. Here in Washington, we've all seen how quickly good intentions can turn into broken promises and wasteful spending. And with a plan of this scale comes enormous responsibility to get it right. And that's why I've asked Vice President Biden to lead a tough, unprecedented oversight effort, because nobody messes with Joe.
We're coming up on a break here on the Malloy program, but if you're watching on television, have you ever seen such a petulant, sour, nasty face group of white men as these Republicans sitting in this joint session? The sour, every one of them looks like 10 minutes prior to coming into the chambers, they had to suck a lemon and pour hot sauce in their eyes. What a bunch of swine. There they sit. You know, and Obama is just embarrassing the hell out of them when he says, you know, I want to thank this Congress for putting this together. And resounding applause, except from the right side of the chamber. And there they sit like a bunch of toad frogs just sitting there. You can almost smell them. This ugly, nasty, petulant, sweaty, we don't care. We don't care. We don't want the goddamn jobs. We don't want none of this. And what's that darky doing up there anyway?
Possibly a friend. And I woke up with a headache like my head against a board. Twice as cloudy as I'd been the night before. And I went in seeking clarity. I went to the doctor.
The man is kicking ass and taking names. And when this is all over, this speech, Bobby Jindal is going to tell everybody,
well, it's not going to work.
Let's listen some more.
So I ask this Congress to join me in doing whatever proves necessary, because we cannot consign our nation to an open-ended recession. And to ensure that a crisis of this magnitude never happens again, I ask Congress to move quickly on legislation that will finally reform our outdated regulatory system. It is time. It is time. It is time to put in place tough, new common sense rules of the road so that our financial market rewards drive and innovation and punishes shortcuts and abuse. The recovery plan and the financial stability plan are the immediate steps we're taking to revive our economy in the short term. But the only way to fully restore America's economic strength is to make the long-term investments that will lead to new jobs, new industries, and a renewed ability to compete with the rest of the world. The only way this century will be another American century is if we confront at last the price of our dependence on oil and the high cost of health care, the schools that aren't preparing our children, and the mountain of debt they stand to inherit. That is our responsibility. In the next few days, I will submit a budget to Congress. So often we've come to view these documents as simply numbers on a page or a laundry list of programs. I see this document differently. I see it as a vision for America, as a blueprint for our future. My budget does not attempt to solve every problem or address every issue. It reflects the stark reality of what we've inherited: a trillion-dollar deficit, a financial crisis, and a costly recession. Given these realities, everyone in this chamber, Democrats and Republicans, will have to sacrifice some worthy priorities for which there are no dollars. And that includes me. But that does not mean we can afford to ignore our long-term challenges. I reject the view that says our problems will simply take care of themselves, that says government has no role in laying the foundation for our common prosperity. For history tells a different story. History reminds us that at every moment of economic upheaval and transformation, this nation has responded with bold action and big ideas. In the midst of civil war, we laid railroad tracks from one coast to another that spurred commerce and industry. From the turmoil of the Industrial Revolution came a system of public high schools that prepared our citizens for a new age. In the wake of war and depression, the GI Bill sent a generation to college and created the largest middle class in history. And a twilight struggle for freedom led to a nation of highways, an American on the moon, and an explosion of technology that still shapes our world. In each case, government didn't supplant private enterprise. It catalyzed private enterprise. It created the conditions for thousands of entrepreneurs and new businesses to adapt and to thrive. We are a nation that has seen promise amid peril and claimed opportunity from ordeal. Now we must be that nation again. That is why, even as it cuts back on programs we don't need, the budget I submit will invest in the three areas that are absolutely critical to our economic future: energy, health care, and education. It begins with energy. We know the country that harnesses the power of clean, renewable energy will lead the 21st century. And yet it is China that has launched the largest effort in history to make their economy energy efficient. We invented solar technology, but we've fallen behind countries like Germany and Japan in producing it. New plug-in hybrids roll off our assembly lines, but they will run on batteries made in Korea. Well, I do not accept a future where the jobs and industries of tomorrow take root beyond our borders, and I know you don't either. It is time for America to lead again. Thanks to our recovery plan, we will double this nation's supply of renewable energy in the next 3 years. We've also made the largest investment in basic research funding in American history, an investment that will spur not only new discoveries in energy, but breakthroughs in medicine and science and technology. We will soon lay down thousands of miles of power lines that can carry new energy to cities and towns across this country. And we will put Americans to work, making our homes and buildings more efficient, so that we can save billions of dollars on our energy bills. But to truly transform our economy, to protect our security and save our planet from the ravages of climate change, we need to ultimately make clean, renewable energy the profitable kind of energy. So I ask this Congress to send me legislation that places a market-based cap on carbon pollution and drives the production of more renewable energy in America. That's what we need. To support that innovation, we will invest $15 billion a year to develop technologies like wind power and solar power, advanced biofuels, clean coal, and more efficient cars and trucks built right here in America. Speaking of our auto industry, everyone recognizes that years of bad decision-making and a global recession have pushed our automakers to the brink. We should not and will not protect them from their own bad practices. But we are committed to the goal of a retooled, reimagined auto industry that can compete and win. Millions of jobs depend on it, scores of communities depend on it, and I believe the nation that invented the automobile cannot walk away from it. None of this will come without cost, nor will it be easy. But this is America. We don't do what's easy. We do what's necessary to move this country forward. And for that same reason, we must also address the crushing cost of health care. There's a cost that now causes a bankruptcy in America every 30 seconds. By the end of the year, it could cause 1.5 million Americans to lose their homes. In the last 8 years, premiums have grown four times faster than wages. And in each of these years, 1 million more Americans have lost their health insurance. It is one of the major reasons why small businesses close their doors and corporations ship jobs overseas. And it is one of the largest and fastest growing parts of our budget. Given these facts, we can no longer afford to put health care reform on hold. We can't afford to do it. It's time. Already, we've done more to advance the cause of health care reform in the last 30 days than we've done in the last decade. When it was days old, this Congress passed a law to provide and protect health insurance for 11 million American children whose parents work full time. Our recovery plan will invest in electronic health records, a new technology that will reduce errors, bring down costs, ensure privacy, and save lives. It will launch a new effort to conquer a disease that has touched the life of nearly every American, including me, by seeking a cure for cancer in our time. And it makes the largest investment ever in preventive care, because that's one of the best ways to keep our people healthy and our costs under control. This budget builds on these reforms. It includes a historic commitment to comprehensive health care reform, a down payment on the principle that we must have quality, affordable health care for every American. It's a commitment. It's a commitment that's paid for in part by efficiencies in our system that are long overdue. And it's a step we must take if we hope to bring down our deficit in the years
ahead. Well, I certainly like what I'm hearing. Don't you? Whether or not these ideas come to fruition, and God knows, I hope they do. I hope Obama is doing something here that will be historic in laying out these plans. But I don't know if it's all steak or all sizzle or no steak, but I'll tell you what, I think this is what we needed to hear. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Ten before the hour, let's get right back to the speech. We'll talk about it later.
For this and future generations, I ask Congress to send me the bipartisan legislation that bears the name of Senator Orrin Hatch, as well as an American who has never stopped asking what he can do for his country, Senator Edward Kennedy. These education policies will open the doors of opportunity for our children. But it is up to us to ensure they walk through them. In the end, there is no program or policy that can substitute for a parent. for a mother or father who will attend those parent-teacher conferences, or help with homework, or turn off the TV, put away the video games, read to their child. I speak to you not just as a president, but as a father. When I say that responsibility for our children's education must begin at home, that is not a Democratic issue or a Republican issue. That's an American issue. There is, of course, another responsibility we have to our children. And that's the responsibility to ensure that we do not pass on to them a debt they cannot pay. That is critical. See, I know we can get some consensus in here. With the deficit we inherited, the cost... the cost of the crisis we face and the long-term challenges we must meet, it has never been more important to ensure that as our economy recovers, we do what it takes to bring this deficit down. That is critical. Now, I'm proud that we passed a recovery plan free of earmarks. And I want to pass a budget next year that ensures that each dollar we spend reflects only our most important national priorities. And yesterday I held a fiscal summit where I pledged to cut the deficit in half by the end of my first term in office. My administration has also begun to go line by line through the federal budget in order to eliminate wasteful and ineffective programs. As you can imagine, there's a process that will take some time, but we have already identified $2 trillion in savings over the next decade. In this budget, we will end education programs that don't work and end direct payments to large agribusiness that don't need them. We'll eliminate... we'll eliminate the no-bid contracts that have wasted billions in Iraq. And reform... and reform our defense budget so that we're not paying for Cold War era weapon systems we don't use. We will root out the waste and fraud and abuse in our Medicare program that doesn't make our seniors any healthier. We will restore a sense of fairness and balance to our tax code by finally ending the tax breaks for corporations that ship our jobs overseas. In order to save our children from a future of debt, we will also end the tax breaks for the wealthiest 2% of Americans. Now, let me be clear. Let me be absolutely clear, because I know you'll end up hearing some of the same claims that rolling back these tax breaks means a massive tax increase on the American people. If your family earns less than $250,000 a year, $250,000 a year, you will not see your taxes increased a single dime. I repeat, not one single dime. In fact, not a dime. In fact, the recovery plan provides a tax cut. That's right, a tax cut for 95% of working families. And by the way, these checks are on the way. To preserve our long-term fiscal health, we must also address the growing cost in Medicare and Social Security. Comprehensive health care reform is the best way to strengthen Medicare for years to come. And we must also begin a conversation on how to do the same for Social Security while creating tax-free universal savings accounts for all Americans. Finally, because we're also suffering from a deficit of trust, I am committed to restoring a sense of honesty and accountability to our budget. That is why this budget looks ahead 10 years and accounts for spending that was left out under the old rules. And for the first time, that includes the full cost of fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. For 7 years,
well, I'll tell you what. Like I said, you never know how much of this is going to come to fruition. You also don't, I'm sure a lot of liberals, myself included, are not hearing exactly what we want to hear on certain issues. But so far, so good. It is such great fun, too, to watch the Republicans have to stand up and applaud certain aspects of what he's saying. If this is still going on when we come back, we'll pick that up again. If not, we're going to take phone calls. So stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Second Thought. Welcome back. 6 and a half past the hour. We are listening, as you are, I hope, to Barack Obama's speech to a joint session of Congress and all sorts of people. When this is over, we are going to take your phone calls. The number is 800-989-1480. We want to hear what you have to say. I'm not going to sit here and smart mouth like I usually do. We would like to hear what you've got to say when it's over. So let's pick it up and get ready to call in with your take on what he's saying tonight.
A willingness to take responsibility for our future and for posterity. Their resolve must be our inspiration. Their concerns must be our cause. And we must show them and all our people that we are equal to the task before us. I know that we haven't agreed on every issue thus far. There are surely times in the future where we will part ways. But I also know that every American who is sitting here tonight loves this country and wants it to succeed. I know that. That must be the starting point for every debate we have in the coming months, and where we return after those debates are done. That is the foundation on which the American people expect us to build common ground. And if we do, if we come together and lift this nation from the depths of this crisis, if we put our people back to work and restart the engine of our prosperity, if we confront without fear the challenges of our time and summon that enduring spirit of an America that does not quit, then someday, years from now, our children can tell their children that this was the time when we performed, in the words that are carved into this very chamber, something worthy to be remembered. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
Well, I certainly think it was a barn burner of a speech. And as promised, I frankly don't give a damn what Bobby Jindal is going to say as the Republican Party rebuttal. What's he going to do? What's Jindal going to do? We don't want no stinking schools. We don't want no jobs. We're against the American family. Now, I'll tell you, you know, you don't have to be a genius to figure out what to look. Honest to God, the Republicans, and they have themselves to blame for this. Let me step back from the fiery rhetoric that I usually dump on Republicans because I genuinely don't like them. But they only have themselves to blame for the horrific mess they're in. They had a chance. God knows they had a chance. Going all the way back to 94, after 40 years in the wilderness, Republicans had a chance. Newt Gingrich came up with his phony, smarmy contract for America, or as people with the sense of a willow branch, the contract on America. They had their choice, their chance. And what did they do? Look at what they – oh, that's right. Well, they did do – they did impeach Bill Clinton and bring him to trial. But look at what they've done. Look at what the Republican Party has done to this country in the past 15 years. Look at it and weep, only weep just for a moment, and then let's get the hell out of there. I mean, I'm ready. Let's get out of that dank, morass, cobwebby, negative, nasty-ass area that the Republican Party has taken us. Oh, unless you're, you know, in the top 1% of money gatherers. Bottom line is, God bless Barack Obama for not bringing it up, but we are about to see a transition in the way this country does business. We are about to see a major transition in the underpinnings of our economic system. It's coming as surely as the Republicans have almost driven the country into a sewer. And we're going to have to adjust. And I don't think it's going to be all that difficult. Social democracy, the idea, you know, somebody sent me an email, said one of the so-called liberal talk show hosts was prattling on today about the stimulus package is an example of socialism. That's garbage. It's such garbage. The Obama administration, for better or for worse, is borrowing money and investing that money just like you do. If you want to go out and buy stocks, if you want to buy a house, if you want to buy a car, the government is borrowing and investing the money on construction projects that are being run by private companies. This is not socialism. It's a hybrid. What is going on with the banks? You know, Obama says he doesn't want to call it nationalization. Okay, let's call it a peach tree. I don't give a damn what we call it. There are banks out there, maybe a couple that are worth saving, but most of them ought to be kicked to the curb. Screw them. What have they done? What have they done? I believe, of course, in nationalizing several key industries, but that's just me. I'm not president. Barack Obama may believe that. But he's not going to tell it to these fools in the Republican Party so they can go out with Bobby Jindal and the hoe from Wasilla and Rush Limbaugh and scare the bejesus out of everybody. I think what he said tonight was, sure, it was very high-powered, very inspirational, long on sizzle. I don't know how much steak is there. But it was how long has it been since you heard a speech like that out of a president? And you know what? For the most part, he wrote it. How long has it been since you've heard that? How long has it been? I mean, compare Obama giving a speech and the dolt that we had for the past 8 years just on that. I don't care if he goes into the back room now, President Obama, and says, ha, 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 really fooled them. When you just take it on face value against what Bush gave us for the past 8 years. Dear God! I don't think the contrast between a stupid, uneducated, a party boy, coke-sniffing drunk, and an educated, a man who really believes in the country, really, regardless of what you think of his policies, he believes in this country. The comparison between Bush and Obama is night and day. Oh, is that a play on words there, Mike? Because one's white and one isn't. It's the difference between night and day, up and down, left and right. Here we are, Barack Obama. So again, maybe Obama is going to go behind the curtain now and giggle and hoot and laugh and say to his wife, didn't I fool him? But you know what? I don't think so. I really don't. So I hope, and I mean that in the pure sense of the word of hope, I hope that there are enough adults in government and business and academia and in the labor movement, in education, in science, who can take a look at where we are and take a look at this young president and say, okay, we have some leadership now. And it may not be all the things that we want. It damn sure isn't all the things that I want. Not by a long shot. But maybe Barack Obama can be nudged in that direction. He's got the spirit. He's got the brains. He's got the intelligence. He's got the compassion. He's got the sympathy. And he's got the empathy. He's not a drunk. He's not a coke user. He's not a draft dodger. He's not a liar or a cheat or a smarmy sneak or a smartass. He's curious. He's willing to learn. He's willing to lead. He's willing to think. What a difference. We're going to take a break. When we come back, let's see what you got to say. 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Second Thought.
I am a patriot. I am a patriot. I am a patriot. Yes, I am. Country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free, for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause I am a patriot.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. You know, I was trying to figure out why Lieberman looked so sour, like he had just sucked his lemon before he came in there. And then I realized, the more I look at him, he wasn't sitting next to McCain. They weren't able to hold hands. I don't know where Lindsey Graham was, but I think all three of them were separated. Maybe the sergeant at arms said, we're not going to have any hand holding and any whispering, so you three are going to be separated, you know, just like a nun back in elementary school. But Lieberman just sat there with this pursed lip, kind of weird look. The most interesting part to me tonight, other than listening to what was said and the plans that Obama lays out, was watching the camera pan through the crowd on these Republicans and a couple of Democrats too, but mostly Republicans. Just the kind of shock and awe as they sat there. It was unbelievable. But Lieberman was not sitting next to his boyfriend, so he was kind of lost. I don't know, Hadassah. They made me sit somewhere else. Oh God. Bob writes in regarding Obama's speech, I have not heard anything like it in the last 8 years. I have never heard anything like it during the Clinton, Bush, Reagan, Carter, Nixon, or Johnson years. I've never heard anything like it, period. Whatever the Republicans can come up with to counter it, we have heard that forever. Maybe this time everyone can tell the difference. Yeah, I think so. And Todd in Mundelein, Illinois, wrote, Mike, wow, what a contrast between George Bush and Barack Obama, huh? Mr. Obama wants to cure cancer. Bush wanted to go to Mars. How in the hell did we survive the last 8 years? Oh, yeah, I almost forgot. He also wanted to run cars on switchgrass. Sheesh. So, that's the part that Obama, he gets straight A's in rhetoric. I mean, and I don't mean rhetoric the way it's been perverted. I mean rhetoric in the sense of being able to talk. to speechify, to say things that get inside your head, and it's not like words bouncing off you. Every time George Bush gave a speech, you knew none of the words were his, none of the ideas were his. He looked bored, he looked like a smart ass, he looked half drunk half the time. Here's a guy who stands up and talks to us. What a difference. Let's go to your phone calls, as promised. Starting with Gulliver in San Diego, listening on Sirius. Gulliver, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm all right, Gulliver. How are you?
Hey, what's up, Mike? Hey, first of all, I just wanted to say that I loved the speech tonight. But, you know, and looking on the crowd, you could definitely see there was a room split in two. And what really struck me was Obama's speech saying that he knew that everyone in the room was, you know, a fan of America, loved the country.
Right.
Trying to unite the parties a little bit, trying to get the whole room together.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a great, kind of a message to us all, really, to, you know, not just jump to the conclusion that the other guys are out to get us or that they're just inherently evil, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Republicans and Democrats can seem like feuding tribes in the desert sometimes.
Well, there's a reason there's a reason for that. I truly think that once the Democrats got their asses kicked back in 1994 after 40 years of being in control and being very lax at governing, I think the Democratic Party came to understand something. We've screwed up. And if we ever do become ascendant again where it concerns political power, we're going to change our ways. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen or not. Now that they are back in control of both houses of Congress and the White House. But what I do know is that the Republicans who came in on the Gingrich Revolution, I was curious to see what they would do. Well, take a look at what they've done. I see it. I don't see a way that I, just me, I don't see how I cannot feel contempt for these people, for these Republicans, the lawmakers. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, because they have so screwed things up. And they continue to just sit there with these dead eyes. And you can almost hear in their heads, you can almost hear them say, yeah, I want to continue to screw things up. Yeah, go ahead.
It's all been, you know, a horrible road to George Bush. We can all agree to that. But if we're going to make it, we are going to make it together.
Well, I agree. I agree. But you and I agree. The Republicans, look, even as we speak, I don't know what's being said. And thanks, Gulliver. I got a boogie because we got a break coming here. I don't know what Bobby Jindal is saying. But the little teasers, advance copies of what he had to say, he's on there right now. If you want to, tune in to MSNBC or CNN and listen to what this guy has to say. But it's all negative. It's all negative. And they're going to be obstructionists. They are going to stand in the way. Don't forget, not a single one of these scum voted for the stimulus plan or the recovery plan, whatever you want to call it. Sure, it didn't go far enough. Sure, there's a lot of things in there, or a lot of things missing. But they sat on their asses, and all they did was come out of all these invitations, all these meetings that Obama sought with them and say, well, we didn't get to put anything in. Oh, go to hell. Go to hell. I'm sorry. See, there I go again, Gulliver. I hope heads cooler than mine can cut a deal with these pigs, but I sure can't.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
You know, what is going to be fun is to watch the Republican murder machine try to avoid or spin what Obama said about if your income is $250,000 or less, you're not going to get a tax increase ever, not one dime. Now, remember what McCain and Palin said all during the campaign. He's going to raise tax on working families. Jesus, God. And Piyush Jindal is saying it right now. That's his name, not Bobby, please. As Don writes, Mike, Palin Jindal or Jindal Palin would be a very entertaining Republican dream ticket. Just think, any evil that sneaks past the hose witch doctor could be exorcised by Governor Jindal. By the way, should people start referring to him by his name, Piyush Jindal, just to watch the hate and bait crowd's heads explode? Don. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. You know, Barack Hussein Obama. Well, that's okay. Piyush Jindal. That's his name. What's his Bobby? You know, what are Republicans a generation ago that said any president that goes by the name Jimmy has got to be an immature freak who doesn't respect the office? Well, how about Bobby, wouldn't you say? Of course, he's not the president, never will be. As a matter of fact, he's going to be a one-term governor, but then back to the Republican training room or whatever, wherever they send these people. Back to your phone calls. Gary calling from Long Island, New York, listening on the Internet. Gary, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, good. You know, one thing I caught on the speech tonight was at the end, and it was so refreshing. He said, "May God bless America." And I tell you, right, that one thing is the major difference between Democrats and Republicans, or at least the type of people that gravitate towards those two things.
Explain it to us. Wait a second. Gary, explain it to us. Tell me what the difference is.
Well, I'll tell you, just saying "May God bless America," okay, it means that, you know, we're asking God to bless America instead of just saying "God bless America." You know, like it's our right. Or, you know, "God bless America" just sounds more, I don't know, it's just, I think it's disrespectful. Just
oh, I see.
This, and not okay. That I'm religious.
Right.
But just saying "May God bless America."
I get your point. It's less of an arrogant, demanding,
exactly,
expected.
Exactly. Not that it means anything either way.
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, Barack Obama is a religious man. He has a belief system that is based in Protestant Christianity.
Mike, you know what's hilarious?
What?
Probably the most religious president that we've had in modern times is probably Jimmy Carter.
Right.
And he is the most scorned person or
sure.
president.
By the religious right, by the so-called
exactly.
Christians.
I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Isn't he a pastor or something?
Well, no, he's a lay leader. He leads a Sunday school class every Sunday.
No, but I thought he was even more than that.
No, he's not. He's not a preacher. He's strictly a lay person. But he leads a men's Sunday school class and has for a number of years. He also occasionally will show up for midweek services at his church down here in Plains, Georgia. But Republicans, you see, religion to them is just something to club people over the head
cool.
with. To Jimmy Carter, it was a means to an end, and the means being just to give him whatever sustenance, spiritual sustenance that he needed. Some people do it through meditation, some through yoga, some through long walks, some through a humanistic ideology. Jimmy Carter happened to do it through his religious beliefs. But the right-wing religious nuts in this country can't stand genuine spiritual belief in Christianity. They hate it. They hate it. What they want is religion on the cheap. They want the kind of religion where you can raise money with it.
Yeah, well, not only that, though, they would be just like the Pharisees, okay?
Well, amen. Amen, brother.
If Christ came back now,
he would vomit.
And didn't kiss their butts, okay?
Yeah.
They would totally reject them.
I hear you. Gary.
God's going to come to us first.
I hear you. Gary, I got to move on. I want to get as many people in as I can. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Obama asking for a blessing, you know, let's face it, most of the people in this country have some sort of religious belief. Muslim, Jews, and Christians all believe in the same God, although you'd never know it, would you? Atheists, people like me, or humanists, whatever you want to call us, are in the decided minority. I think I've said this before, I don't have any problem with people who believe a certain religious theology. The problem, you know, when they use it for what it, I thought religion was invented to be used for their own personal peace of mind, to overcome their own horrific fears of death, to get them through times in their lives that are very painful, very trying, whether it's physical pain, emotional pain, psychological pain. Again, the same thing that can be done through TM or through a deep breathing or through a totally atheistic slash humanistic approach to life. So I don't where I have the problem is, you know, what I just said, when religion becomes a hammer to deny people equal rights, to deny whether they're gay or whether they're women or whether they're black folk or whatever the situation is, to use the Muslims, you know, to say my God is better than your God, and you want to grab these people and say, wait a second, you're talking about the same dude up there, you know, your mythology is the same, your mythology intersects with the Jews and the Muslims. What the hell are you talking about? Stop it. So it's the madness of religion that has always turned me off from the time I decided, look, this is insane. This is totally insane. For me, somebody else may find deep, abiding comfort and solace in their religious mythology or superstition or whatever you want to call it. And Barack Obama happens to be a religious man. There's no question about that. None whatsoever. You know, and John Lennon said a long time ago, whatever gets you through the night, and I certainly agree with that. One open line here. The number is 800-989-1480, so jump in. Mike is calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me on. And by the way, I like what you just said. You summed it right up about religion. In my opinion, it has absolutely no place in government. Shouldn't be there. It's always used as a tool. So I like what you just said. Bottom line, I like Obama's speech. Tell you what. This country has been prostituted for the past 8 years, just hookered by the Republican administration.
Yeah.
And, I got to tell you, this guy, he wants to make changes. I really feel that. And anybody who kind of goes against him or tries to talk him down or give him any kind of resistance, how can you do that? I get frustrated.
I know. I get
so freaking fired up about this. I mean, I don't know. I'm rambling now, but bottom line, the speech was great, and this country definitely needs change. This country's been prostituted, and there's other countries, literally, that would go to war with their government. With what our government has done to us, other country, we did it once against the British.
Right.
We went to war against the British for less than what this country, what our government has done to us as a people.
That's very true. That's very true.
So, I don't know, whatever it is. So anyway, I love the show, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
All right, sir. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. What has been missing, I think, for the past 8 years is some sort of inspiring leadership. Inspiring in a good way. You know, Hitler was inspiring, but you know, a Bush. Bush couldn't inspire for good or for bad. He was just a cipher, a blip. There was every time he opened his mouth, I could see the evil hand of Dick Cheney or the evil hand of Paul Wolfowitz or the evil hand of all those neocon thugs that clustered around Bush like flies around a dung heap. It was just, oh, the stench. And that was the other thing, just the smell. Metaphorically speaking, the stench that rose up off that man and the people around him, it was unbelievable. It just got to the point, for me, when his mere presence was gagging. It would set off the gag reflex because it was very clear that, A, he didn't have a clue, B, he was destroying not just this country but assisting in destroying the planet, and he was a dunce, a complete dunce. And I think more than anything else, the speech that Obama gave tonight just made so clear the difference between Obama and Bush and the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. The Democratic Party has needed somebody like Barack Obama. You can make the argument in the same manner that the Republican Party back in 1980 needed somebody like Ronald Reagan. Say what we want, and I certainly think Reagan was a complete negative force for the country ultimately, but he energized the Republican Party. Barack Obama, I think, will energize the Democratic Party. The difference, of course, is once energized, the Republican Party committed horrific mischief and crimes against humanity. Let's hope that once energized, the Democratic Party won't do that. Or is that hoping too much? All right, more of your phone calls as soon as we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Second Thought.
He's not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, 10 before the hour, Lou in Arkansas writes, Mike, for the first time in 8 years, I watched the president of our country talk to Congress without my becoming nauseated after 30 seconds. What I heard him say to them and the people, what I heard him say to them and the people could boil down to simply this: push, pull, or get the hell out of the way. Yeah, that's very true. Republicans don't understand the work ethic. They don't understand family values. They don't understand respect. The only thing Republicans understand is tax cut. They're losers. They had their chance starting in 94, and it went for a sad, sorry 12 or 13 years. It's over, boys. Sit down. Shut up. Understand that you are backbenchers now, and you're going to be for a very, very long time. Your ideas are at best superfluous and at worst counter to the best interests of this country. So shut up. Get out of town. If I had my way, I would take the Republican Party into a field and cut its head off. But I don't, have my way. Back to your phone calls. Stephen is calling from Burbank, California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Stephen, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hey.
What's happening is William Grider, Robbie Batra, Paul Krugman, I'm thinking that Obama might have a private line to these guys, and he's not telling anybody about it.
Well, maybe so, but he's not doing what Grider and Krugman are recommending. First of all, he's not allocating as much money as both Grider and Krugman talk about, and Grider is more into the democratic socialism where it concerns certain key industries. But you may be right. Maybe they get together and have tea in the afternoon, huh?
Yeah, but we can't let anybody know about that. And we can say things that Obama can't say. We can say things like remove the cap on Social Security to put in a retroactive pension backup,
That's right. I've never understood why do we stop taxing people for the Social Security deductions out of their paycheck when they hit, what is it now, $96,000, $97,000 or something?
$190,000.
Oh, it's $190,000?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think it's.
A baseball player makes that in his first inning. Yankee Stadium.
Are you sure it's that high?
I heard it say $190,000.
Stephen, I'm going to disagree with you. I think it's around 92, 94,000. But the other part of what you're saying is right. I mean, as long as people are earning money in this country, why aren't they contributing? Take the cap off Social Security. You're damn right. What, rich people can't contribute? You know why rich people got rich, the ones that aren't doing it on borrowed money and phony mortgages?
Wait a minute.
Rich people get rich because they have not rich people down here working. Yeah. We contribute by the sweat of our brow to their companies, which is fine, but they can carry their own share. Now, what were you going to say?
Just exactly what you said. Punch the time clock, don't goof off, and punch out. And that's where all that wealth goes. I make those guys rich.
Yeah, I hear you. Stephen, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Good points. Thanks a lot. Moving right along, Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas, listening on the Internet. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
Oh, it's been too long.
Yes, it has.
You know, I've been kind of stuck on this strange sensation because for the foremost of my teenage and adult years, it's been, gosh, the president's such an idiot. Now that we have Obama, I can't stop wincing but still smiling at the fact, oh, my God,
yeah.
I actually agree with what he's saying.
Well, did you notice how many words he mispronounced in his hour-plus speech? Yeah, not one.
Well, you know, really, most of me just wanted to see this speech to see all the Republicans and how, well, as you say, how sour they looked.
Oh, my God.
But you know, the thing was, I'm really optimistic, but there's still that grinding in the back of my head. There's still that you got to be cautious, you got to look out for the predator, you got to make sure that something isn't really up in the background. And I just can't seem to shake that background feeling that, you know, something could happen, something could go wrong, and I'm going to end up being horribly disappointed. And I don't want that to happen.
Well, I know, and I think part of that, you know, sometimes the things we fear most, we bring it into our lives. I don't know if you believe that. I don't know that I believe that. But you put out enough negative thought, and you're going to attract, if nothing else, you're going to influence, not attract, you're going to influence your own mind into doing things unconsciously that make that negativity manifest. Now, a lot of people say it a different way. Well, if you put negative energy into the universe, you're going to get negative energy back. So, you know, take your pick there.
Yeah, the law of attraction or something like that.
Well, whatever it is. But
I got really interested in that.
Yeah, I agree with the idea that this man does provide some inspiration, and you can interpret that word any way you want. He also has the ability to talk like a normal human being. The rhetoric is not high flown. It's not over the heads of most of us who listen and want to hear somebody address us on the level that we're comfortable with. And you and I both know that he could if he chose to.
Yeah. Oh God, yes.
But it's targeted right at us. And to watch the Republicans just kind of be knocked around like a pinball tonight, it was great fun. Matthew, I got to leave there. We have a break. All right.
All righty.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Take care. We do have a break, so stick around. Come back after the top of the hour. We have two, three open lines, so I'd like to hear what you've got to say. Your take on what President Obama had to say tonight. Okay. Oh, and by the way, a lot of people are writing in the cap. 90,000, 96,000, 102,000. So it's in the ballpark of 90 to 100,000, right in there somewhere. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Second Thought. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Malloy on Second Thought Network. Phone number here is 800-989-1480. We have an open line if you want to voice your opinion of Obama's speech tonight. Who sent this? Tom writes, I agree with Obama's speech 95%. It was 95% perfect. Afghanistan might become his Vietnam. I worry we may be conned into supporting a war there. 9/11 being an inside Dick Cheney job, Afghanistan had absolutely nothing to do with the attacks on 9/11. Tom in Minneapolis. Yeah, that's a very very good chance that could happen. The government of which one of the stands? Which one was it, Kathy? Tajikistan, Pukistan, Crazystan. You don't have to send me the right answer because I got it here in the stack. But one of the stands where we've been leasing an airbase to launch our assaults, or not an airbase, it was airbase to bring in supplies, weaponry and bombs and bullets and so on and so forth. The government there has said, no, that's it, enough. The Russians talked them into bailing out, and the Russians paid them a lot of money. Kazakhstan? Anyway, that's going to make it harder for Barack Obama to continue this folly in Afghanistan. I hope he has advisors who will explain to him we have to get out of there. We really do. We really do. Back to your phone calls. Who's next? Jimmy is calling from Washington State, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jimmy. Jimmy?
Yeah, this is Jimmy.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, man. How's my connection? This is a bad phone.
You're coming through okay.
Okay, yeah. I was telling him I'm not crazy about the Second Thought name. I can remember you as a contributing writer from The Great Speckled Bird.
Oh, my God.
I think you ought to go with the Great Speckled Bird Network.
Well, nobody knows what that is, and you're going back to the mid-70s. How do you remember the Great Speckled Bird and my involvement with it?
Jimmy? Well, you had a byline.
Yeah, well, I did a lot of writing for him. It was the only radical newspaper, a left-leaning a Marxist, a communist, socialist newspaper in the Southeast. I'm just curious how in the world in Washington State you heard about the Great Speckled Bird and my involvement with it.
Well, no, I don't live in Washington. I'm a driver. I'm sitting out here watching the rain come down.
Oh.
I live in Florida.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And back then, I was a student at the University of Tennessee, and of course, you know, we'd get them up there, and then I'd make trips to Atlanta and stuff.
Well, that's true.
I've been
well,
that... underground and all that stuff. But,
you know,
the Great Speckled Bird Network, I think, would sell you.
Well, I'll certainly pass it on up the food chain, Jimmy. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you checking in.
Okay, man. I love the show.
Thank you. Take care. Great Speckled Bird, it's a term, I think, out of the Bible, but it's also from a country western song. The Great Speckled Bird started as an anti-war newspaper at Emory University here in Atlanta back in 1967 or 68. And then once it matriculated and left Emory University and set up as the Atlanta Writers Collective, there were a whole series of people who worked there. Over its roughly 10-year, no, less than that, maybe 9-year lifespan. And, of course, we were firebombed once. We were harassed by the FBI. The white racists hated us. But it was quite an experience. That was a long time ago. Long time ago.
Well, how could you have written for them? You would have only been about 12.
Kathy, I'm probably the oldest guy you'll know for a long time. But no, that was they just had the 40th anniversary of the bird last summer here in Atlanta. Retrospective, got together a lot of the people who who spent any time at the Bird whatsoever, who wrote or distributed or took it to the publisher. We had a publisher here in Atlanta, and they finally said, to hell with it, we're not going to publish your commie rag anymore. We had to drive it about 45 miles, about 80 miles round trip, just to get to a publisher who would print it, or not a publisher, but a printer that would print it. It was the Atlanta Writers Collective. I believe that was what our official name was. But the term Great Speckled Bird was right out that old Bible, right? Okay, but I digress. Back to your phone calls. Tim is calling from New York, listening on the Internet. Tim, welcome to the program. Hey, Tim.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, Mike. Wow, I can't believe I got you. First, I want to thank you so much and your wife for everything you do.
Well, you're welcome.
I really liked Obama's speech. It was very inspiring. My idea was that in this time when everybody's looking, you know, for things to be done in a moment, in an hour, in a day, that, you know, they should remember that it took the Republicans 20 years from Reagan through Clinton, who was really a Republican, just to get to the point where we got the last George Bush. And this is going to take more than 100 days or even 100 months to really realize what Obama is talking about in his speech. But, you know, we should give ourselves the time and put the effort in, because we sure want to get where he wants to go rather than where we've just been.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. You know, given the choice, regardless of how people may evaluate what Barack Obama said as, 80% high-flown rhetoric and 20% substance, you know, at this point tonight, right now, I don't give a damn. I liked hearing what I heard, and I don't think it was high-flown rhetoric at all. I think he was addressing and laying out what needs to be done in this country. Barack Obama, being the president of the United States, has no power of the purse whatsoever. That's up to Congress. Spending bills have to arise in the House. They have to be confirmed more or less by the Senate, and then passed by both houses and then sent on to the president. So, you know, Obama has I think his major job right now is to inspire a half-dead, lethargic Democratic Party that couldn't find its ass with both hands if somebody else held a flashlight, and a Republican Party that has drifted so close to fascism that the line between the Republicans and fascism no longer exists. Half of the members of the Republican Party in the House and the Senate are fascists. They're already there. So what Obama, I think the main thing he was trying to do, two things, inspire the people listening tonight, that, you know, let's get our heads out of our nether regions and start acting like people who have some courage and are willing to face some horrendous problems that the Republicans have handed us. And I think he was telling the Democrats and the Republicans in the Congress, wake up, smell the coffee, do something. I'll provide the leadership. You provide the funding. I'll provide the ideas. You can go ahead and tinker with them and play with them and make them better if you can. Now, let's see what happens. You know what I'm saying, Tim?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I went to college in the 70s. I've been around. I've seen how many things have gone under the bridge between then and now.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I agree with everything you said. We need inspiration. We need a little patience. And we just need to head in a better direction, and that's where he's going.
I hear you. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Thanks a lot. Yeah. And what's wrong with an inspiring leader? You know, we've all become, myself included, I put myself right in the front of this line, we've all become horrendous cynics. And we've gotten, I'm going to drop the we pronoun. I've gotten so negative about so much. Oh, no, I'm not, because you have too. So negative about so much. So what is wrong with an inspiring, hell-raising, hand-clapping speech that for the first time in a very long time helped me realize that I do live in a culture, a society that does have tremendous potential. 230 years later, it still has tremendous potential. We haven't done it yet. We got close. We haven't done it yet. So why give in to the murderous negativity of these filthy Republicans, right?
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Back to your phone calls in just a second. The night would not be complete without our missive from Prairie 2, our economic correspondent. And he writes this, subject line, Bernanke, as you know, testified today before Congress. Subject line from Prairie 2, Bernanke sees early recovery in pink elephants. Yeah, I heard that today, by the way. It was all over the news, and boy, did that inspire the market. It went up, what, 250 points or something? Anyway, Prairie 2 writes, excuse me, testifying before the Banking Committee, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke said he is hoping that the recession will end this year and recovery begin next year. Bat squeeze. Obama hasn't even started to address the structural problems that put us into this death spiral. Bernanke works for the Bush crime family and doesn't answer to Obama, so don't expect the truth from him. Bernanke is probably trying to get out in front of events so that he can shape government policy on things like bank nationalization under the guise that things really aren't so bad and the Federal Reserve can just tidy up. Keep in mind that when the Republican Congress deregulated the banks, the excuse was that the Fed could keep an eye on things, and Congress gave them more authority to do so. Then Chairman Greenspan did exactly nothing but pass out trillions in cheap money, creating yet another bubble. When Bernanke took over from Greenspan, his response to the mess was to hand out another $2 trillion in cash to the big banks and assume liability for another $6 trillion in questionable assets. These are the same big banks Obama is now considering seizing as insolvent. The top 10 banks control two-thirds of all bank assets, and they are all bust. Bernanke should be sharing a length of chain with Greenspan working on a rock pile. And speaking of greedy, short-sighted bankers, the geniuses that run the credit card companies have cut everybody's credit limit and are now jacking up the interest rates. If your rate has only doubled, you're lucky. Many people who had low single-digit rates are now paying 30%. Amex is reportedly offering people $300 gift cards to close out their accounts. They don't share Ben's optimism about the economy. I suspect they are filling their vaults with canned goods. From Prairie, too. Have we gotten an offer for $300, Kathy, to send in our Amex? We haven't?
I would like to take bids, though. There's a thought. Maybe I could put it on Craigslist and see who would like to buy my American Express card.
No, I'll tell you what.
I'll autograph it.
I'll tell you what. No. I love American Express because it's not a credit card. That's why I love it. That sucker has to be paid in full every month. So I love Amex. Back to your phone calls. Gabe is calling from Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Gabe, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I'm the first-time caller. I've been listening to your show for a couple of years now. And my comment was that I was listening to Governor Jindal of Louisiana and how essentially the guts of his statement was government bad, business is good. And isn't that the same? I thought to myself, isn't that the same mentality that got us into this mess in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. Only much more extreme than government bad, business good.
Yep.
There has to be a working understanding and agreement between government and free enterprise. There has to be, especially if the free enterprise is going to consist of capitalism that will devour every man, woman, and child in front of it unless it's restrained by government. So I don't think anybody is asking for full blown socialism. I know I damn sure am not.
Yep.
What needs to happen is a cooperative attitude between government and business or industry, whatever you want to call it. And without that, that's
yep,
what we're
you,
looking
you
at
wind
now.
Up here, where we're at right,
right
now.
Here we are. Yeah, go ahead. Anything else?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just, it's one of those things, you know. Like, I was reading through the stuff about the peanut recall and everything, and it's like the merging of the corporation and the government is what caused a lot of this problem.
Oh, sure.
Because you had the banks and the companies screwing people over and the government helping them sweep it under the rug and cover it up.
Well, you know what?
Just like we saw with the TARP bill.
I don't understand why there's any debate around the idea that if business starts to become the government, which is what happened under Reagan, Pappy, Bush, Clinton, and Bush too.
Yep.
If business starts to become government, if capitalism starts to run the show, does anybody with any sense at all think that capitalism is going to be a fair arbiter, is going to take care of poor folks or people that need medical care, make sure that there's equality in the workplace or equality where it concerns human rights? Does anyone really think that capitalism or any kind of a business model is going to do that? If they do think that, they're crazy. They're out of their minds. Capitalism is interested in one thing. It's hidden in their name. Oh, we'll be right back. Thanks, Gabe.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Email here and then back to your phone calls. The number is 800-989-1480. Linda in Ohio writes, Spindle Jindal. She writes, to keep on doing the same things and expecting different results. Insanity. That's what the Republicans are offering. More of the same old idiocy, fear, etc. Jindal is delusional. There's plenty of proof that we would not be better off if the South had won the Civil War. The real reason we are in the hell of a mess we are in is that they are still fighting it. It is terribly unseemly for the slave state senators to demand that UAW auto workers lower their wages to Southern state wage rates, and it is doubly so to observe their behavior vis-a-vis President Obama. Out of the goodness of his heart, Obama welcomed them with respect and with the open hand of friendship. They not only met him with clenched fists, but with a big middle finger. He welcomed them to the White House, and they peed all over the furniture. The Republican motto is now, country first, my ass! I thank God every day that the North won the Civil War, that the liberals won the Revolutionary War, that the Allies won World War II, and that Barack Obama won the 2008 election. There are times in our history when God has truly blessed America. Linda, Ohio. And from Alex in Marblehead, Massachusetts, Mike, I liked Obama's speech very much. I thought it was very inspiring and uplifting, and I have faith Obama will be able to get our economy back on track. However, I'm disappointed that he does not seem to want to do any investigations of the previous administration. It looks like the Bush crime family will get away with all of their crimes. Why do you think Obama wants to give them a free pass for all they've done? It really is disappointing. Alex from Marblehead. I think there are a lot of reasons, and they're all political, and I don't agree with them. But the thing, Alex, I think you and I have to understand is Obama has a plan. How long has he been? How long has he been president of the United States? How long has he been in office, for God's sake? A month? When was the inauguration, Kathy? January 20th? What's today, the 24th? Jesus God. 23rd? No, this is the 24th today. Yesterday was the 23rd. That was our anniversary. the 24th. So he's been in office less than 5 weeks. And I have to assume that he has a plan. His plan may be to let these crooks go and to try to rely or to hope that somebody else does this dirty, filthy work. In a sense, I almost don't blame him for wanting to tackle the criminality of these monsters that almost destroyed our country. On the other hand, sure, I'm right there with you, Alex. I wish you would. I wish you would unleash the full fury of this government for what they did to the Constitution, what they did to the American people, what they did to the economy, the environment, international relations, international law. You know, if the best he can do, Obama can do, and I don't mean this in a negative way, if the best he can do is to do what he did tonight and declare to a shriek of applause, even from the deadheads on the dumbasses on the Republican side, we do not torture. If that's the best he can do, then maybe that's the best he can do, if you understand what I'm saying. Bob Alexander and Vince Bugliosi have made a monumental effort to get at least one county district attorney in this country to bring murder charges against Bush. If that were to just happen, in the discovery phase of the trial like that, oh my God, the evidence that would come out against not just Bush, but his whole cadre of murderers. I don't think the American public, even the most hardcore right-wing Republican, could turn their face away from what would be exposed. But is that going to happen? I don't know. I don't know. It depends on 2,700 or 2,200 prosecutors in this country, whether or not there is one with the courage to go after this criminal son of a bitch and the people who assisted his criminality. I have made the argument that Obama has no bigger duty than to clean up the law-breaking. And who has said, I think members of Congress, Democrats, have said that if Barack Obama lets the slide, then he becomes an accessory after the fact. Obama knows what happened. I know what happened. You know what happened. Even these dumbass, filthy Republicans know what happened. They just don't care because they hate America. Whether or not Bush and his gang gets away with it may depend on history rather than on criminal activity in the here and now. And it may happen a long time from now after you and I, Alex, are long gone. You know what my feelings are about that. Back to your phone calls. Memphis, Tennessee. Mary is calling from Memphis, listening on the internet. Hey, Mary.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Good, good.
I had some quick comments on Obama's speech, and I can hardly hear you. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. Maybe in our home office they can pot the sound up. I don't know if that can be done or not. But
Okay. First, he didn't make the only parts of his speech I heard were what you played on the air, because I shot the TV years ago. So from what I heard, he made no mention of the labor unions, although he did mention the automakers.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That was a little
true.
Disappointing to me.
Right.
And then the second thing was he was talking about people buying homes they couldn't afford, but he didn't say too much about the loan sharks.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing was... and I remember Bush trying to do away with Social Security and replace it with mere savings accounts, which people just don't have.
Right.
And Obama talked about savings accounts, and I wasn't sure from the brief spot I heard whether he meant it additionally to Social Security as an alternative or what. I wasn't sure.
Trust me on this. There is no Democrat on earth, and actually, when you get right down to it, no Republican who would ever make it the office of the presidency would ever tamper. I don't care what they say. They would never tamper with Social Security in a negative way. I think what Obama would like to do When he talks about adjusting Social Security, I think he's talking about taking the cap off so that people who make $300,000, $400,000, $1 million, $6 million, $10 million, $20 million have to pay into the Social Security fund instead of it ending right now at around $100,000.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be really, really great.
That's the easiest solution to the so-called Social Security crisis is just take the cap off the damn thing. That's all that has to be done.
Every polite person takes off his cap now and then.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth, Mary?
And finally, I noticed that the biggest round of applause that he got was when he said that we had to deal with our, quote, inherited, unquote, deficit. And I can just imagine how the Republicans looked during that line.
Well, he damn sure that was the loudest round of applause from the Democrats. But, you know, the most sustained applause is when he talked about the soldiers, about the military. And I would just love to hear someday, I doubt if I'll hear it in my lifetime, but I would love to hear a president say, for the first time tonight, American public, we have not a single soldier on foreign soil, either in combat or in a foreign base. Our military is home. Our adventurism is finished. We no longer are going to try to be the Roman Empire. And our boys and our girls are home safe tonight. As a matter of fact, we are decommissioning 90% of the Army. Because when you think about it, Mary, we don't need a land force unless we're interested in conquest, unless we're interested in overthrowing governments, unless we're interested in stealing somebody else's resources. We are safe as it's possible to be in the 21st century because we have nuclear weapons. Everyone's safe. No one's safe. As long as we have nuclear weapons. So this idea of maintaining, and you know, the framers didn't want a standing army. That was one thing that Washington, and I think even Adams and Madison all advocated against is having a standing army because they knew it could do nothing but mischief. So, or a president could order it to do mischief. So I would love to hear a president sometime in my life, and it'll never happen, say, that we are no longer a militaristic society. If somebody attacks us, we will obliterate them with our nuclear weapons. But other than that, our boys, our girls, are home. End of story.
Yeah, that would be great.
Wouldn't that be a wonderful day?
Great.
All right, Mary, thanks a lot.
Carry on. I never knew you were one of them old commies from the Speckle Bird days.
Oh, yeah.
Good on you, Mike.
Keep those emails coming, Mary.
Sure will.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Take care. We got a break here. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy on Second Thought.
The Muriel plays piano every Friday at the Hollywood. And they brought me down to see her. And they asked me if I would do a little number. And I sang with all my might. She said, tell me, are you a Christian child? And I said, ma'am, I am. Tonight, walking in Memphis, I was walking with my feet 10 feet off a beam. Walking in Memphis, but do I really feel the way I feel? Walking in Memphis, I was walking with my feet 10 feet off a beam.
Ten before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program and answered your calls tonight. Our technical advisor is Ben Burt. Sharon Gordy is our military affairs correspondent. Bridget Wolf and Bob Alexander are ethical advisors. And economic correspondent is Bruce Enberg. Executive producer is Catherine Bay. Email from... bunch of letters. Is it just me, or does it seem those who try to be the public face of and try to defend the positions of the Republican Party seem to get more and more freakish? Did you hear tubular bells in your head while Bobby Jindal spoke? I didn't watch Piyush Jindal. I don't want to hear that garbage. And from Mr. T.M., well, Mike, I'm wondering, am I the only one who thinks Bobby Jindal resembles a bug? Keith Olbermann was right when he mumbled, "Oh, God," as the creep appeared on the TV screen. The GOP is not a political party. It is a cult of psychotics and aliens from outer space. Mr. T. All right, a couple more emails from you folks. Back to phone calls. Let me see here. Joe is calling from Chicago, listening on Sirius Satellite XM, Sirius XM. Hey, Joe.
Hello. Yeah, I like how Barack Obama says we're getting out of Iraq, but we're going to go ahead and invade Pakistan, stepping up probe drones in there to bomb villages. That's great. He embraces the anti-war left in his campaign, then turns his back on him. What a hypocrite.
Yeah, that sucks big time. You're right. You didn't have to shout that into your phone and hang up, though.
I didn't hang up.
Oh, you're still there. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought I heard your phone click off. What?
I'm a Republican, just so you know. The hypocrisy on the left, it dwarfs the hypocrisy on the right.
Okay. All right, Joe. Well, listen, thanks a lot. I appreciate your hysterics tonight. You know, you're absolutely right, though, Joe. For Barack Obama to continue his Bush and Cheney's invasion and destabilization and murder in Afghanistan and Pakistan is something that I think most Democrats would like to see go away. And if that's the only thing you can find to hang your hat on tonight, having had your ass handed to you by his speech, I'm right there with you, pal. I'm right there with you. Tom is calling from Bullhead City, Arizona. Tom,
hello.
Welcome to the program. Hey, Tom.
Hello.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah, hey, you have to be patient with me. I'm drinking a bottle of C.K. Mondavi 2002 Pinot Noir.
All right, well, go ahead.
Well, that last guy, Joe, must have been Joe the Plumber. Is he Joe the Plumber? I wanted to cry. I mean, I was so emotional when I saw Ruth Bader Ginsburg coming out of there.
Yeah.
I had to cry. I mean, you know, this is our last hope here, you know?
Well, I certainly can understand what you mean by that, but I don't think she's the last hope. If she leaves the bench for whatever reason, I do believe that where it concerns matters judicial or the judicial branch of the government, that Barack Obama is going to lean heavily towards the liberal left, and I think he's going to do that because not that he's so much of a liberal, but because I think he understands the concept of balance, and I think he also understands that the Republican Party right now is owned by a bunch of right wing mad hatters. He's trying to bring them back into the family of man, so to speak, but it's not going to work. They are alien bastards, all of them, and they belong to an organization that needs to be decapitated. But I don't think that should Ruth Bader Ginsburg leave the Supreme Court for any reason, whether it's health or just because she wants to retire, I don't think Obama is going to do anything untoward where it concerns that. Thanks, Tom. I appreciate you checking in. Drew is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 The Mic. Hey, Drew.
Hey, Mike Malloy. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, welcome welcome to the program.
Great show, great show. You're very therapeutic for me.
Well, good.
I just wanted to say, no matter what happens with this stimulus package within the next year, or the next 2 years, or the next 3 years, no matter how beneficial the stimulus package could be or will probably be, no matter what, the Republican propaganda machine is going to turn it, and they're going to cite a few obscene examples of supposed ways, which can happen when you're dealing with billions and billions of dollars.
Right.
And they're going to, no matter what, they're going to turn it into a negative.
Yeah, that's what the Republican Party is all about. They're the party of losers in Congress and out here in the general public. Anyone who's a Republican now in these times is don't know, crazy or determined to commit suicide. Because anyone who supports Republican Party policies right now, who's a working American, is supporting his or her own destruction. And their children's destruction, and their family's destruction. So, I hear you. But you know what, Drew, we're out of time. We've got a boogie. So thanks a lot. We'll talk again, okay?
Hope the great work, yeah.
All right, Drew, thanks. I appreciate it. Let's see what happens. I'm kind of curious what will happen in the stock market tomorrow. Not that the stock market means a damn thing, except the gamblers are losing their asses or picking up a few bucks on any given day. But I'll be curious to see what happens to the stock market tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy on Second Thought Radio Network.